one store next to that one. An outstanding play by DJ LeMahieu. Not in time, and Reyes has his 500th career stolen base. Luis Guillorme ties the game with a pinch hit home run. Oh! And welcome back to the Battle of New York, everybody. My name is Matt Nodell, and we're doing something a little bit different today. I'm interviewing a friend of mine, Steve, who I met on social media and was very fortunate enough to accept my request to come on and be interviewed today. Steve, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure, Matt. First, thanks for having me on today. My name is Steve Gleiner. I'm the CEO at Home Run Professional Sports Consulting. That is my own company. I am a consultant to Diamond Baseball Holdings currently and working on some special projects with them. And a longtime minor league baseball executive, over 35 years running minor league baseball teams along the East Coast. And really excited to be on with you. It's always great to talk baseball.
Oh, my God. Best pastime there is, right?
Absolutely.
I want to get right into it. You started off with the initial Renegades team. And I think that that's a really cool little tidbit of information. The team itself, obviously, we love seeing all the fun stuff that they're doing right now. But, as a part of the initial staffing team for the Renegades, what were your goals professionally getting into that role? Because I'm sure you could have had lofty goals to hope that you got to where you are today, because you are very, very successful. But what were your original goals when you first got into it?
So I'm going to go a little further back than the Renegades. I was a junior at State University of New York at Albany and was working on a communication degree with a business minor. Didn't really know what I wanted to do with that. And I transferred from SUNY Buffalo, where I was working with the school newspaper called The Spectrum, and we covered the Buffalo Bisons and the Buffalo Sabres for the sports department. And that was my first introduction to minor league baseball, was with the Bisons. And at the time, they were playing at the old Rock Pile, which is where the movie The Natural was filmed. So you talk about getting into minor league baseball for the first time, really experiencing it in a ballpark that already had some recognition amongst baseball fans in general. And then to see what minor league baseball was all about and the intimacy of it and the ability to see players before they are household names. And I was just enthralled with all this. I just thought, I wonder what kind of career path there is in minor league baseball. Got to cover the team for that season and then transferred over parts of the beginning part of that season, actually. And transferred over to SUNY Albany, where in my junior year, I found out and found out that the Yankees had their AA farm club in Albany. They were called the Albany Colony Yankees. And I was like, well, this is meant to be. I'm a lifelong Yankees fan, and here's an opportunity to get into minor league baseball with a Yankees affiliate and see where this takes me. And so I went ahead and went down to the ballpark. This is in January of 1988, and knocked on the door and was greeted by a gentleman there who eventually became my boss. But at the time, I basically said, look, I'm just looking for an opportunity to get my foot in the door. And he basically said, I've got nothing for you, kid. Sorry. And closed the door in my face. And I said, okay, maybe I caught him at a bad time. Let's see if I can come back next week. And anyway, I did this for 7 weeks in a row before he finally acquiesced and said, okay, we'll find something for you to do. So there's a story of persistence right there. Today it might be borderline stalking. I'm not sure. But they took it as persistence, which is what it was. And that was my opportunity. I got my foot in the door March of 1988. It was about 3 weeks before opening day. My first day on the job, I was sorting season tickets on a big conference table, putting season ticket packages together in yellow envelopes, and then got to drive all over town. You know, we didn't have GPS back then, so I had to go to AAA and get some triptychs made up and some maps, and found my way around the back streets of Albany and town of Colony, which I didn't really know my way around too much other than what was on campus or around campus. But that was my foot in the door. And then, of course, with the season starting, I'll never forget opening night was snowed out. We played the next night. It was about 35 degrees at game time. The field was frozen. Andy Stankiewicz was our second baseman. He took a bad hop off the frozen infield, and I think it might have broken his nose, or at least bloodied his nose. You know, that was it. I was hooked. I was like, I want to do this for a long time. Now, at what level, I didn't quite know. So I started asking around the staff that was working there and asked if I could speak to each person that was on this staff in Albany at the time. I started picking their brain. I had a notebook that I still have to this date, and I took all my notes in there and would ask everybody, you know, what was their role? What was their impact on the operation? What were their goals? How do they get to where they're at? How do they expect to get to where they want to be? And I just took a lot of notes. And what I found out was is that through a few people, they kind of told me that the best route was to do every job on the ladder until you become a GM. Because that was really, I figured out within about 10 days, I wanted to be a GM. I wanted to run the operation one day. And so that was how my path was created. And that brought me down to Charleston, South Carolina, a couple of years later, where I had opportunity for more growth and eventually became an assistant general manager, and then was there for 4 years, and then had the opportunity to come to Hudson Valley. And what was unique about the Renegades at the time is we were a brand new franchise, building a new ballpark.
Right.
And so, you know, to start an operation from the ground up and be a part of that and help mold something that didn't exist yet in any shape or form was really exciting. And that was quite a ride, because the ballpark here, there was some not issues, but just they had to go back to the legislature to restructure the financing of the stadium package. And it had to go back.
I feel like that happens a lot too.
It does from time to time, but it had to go in front of the legislature for another vote. And, you know, there was a possibility that maybe it wouldn't pass this time. And here it was April of 1994, with an opening day of June 18th, we were 72 days away from opening day, and all we had was a field. And when I say a field, it was like a grass field with tree stumps in it. It wasn't a baseball field yet. There was nothing there. And fortunately, it was about a five-hour legislative session, but the vote passed. I think 27-8 was the number. April 8th, 1994, and the next morning, April 9th, construction crews were out on the site, tearing things up and getting ready to build the ballpark, which was built in 71 days.
That's incredible.
And when I say built in 71 days, it was built in 71 days to the point of where we could play baseball and host fans. But the permanent clubhouses weren't there. Permanent concession stands weren't finished. Sky suites weren't done yet. The press box was basically a shell with some blue tarps on top so that the guys inside were protected from sun and rain. And over the next couple of years, actually, they finished the stadium. And so I was there for the first 10 years of the Renegades. And then in the same ownership group, the Gold Coin Group, had the opportunity to go down to Fort Myers, Florida, and run the Florida State League's Fort Myers Miracle, which are now the Mighty Muscles. Minnesota Twins affiliate, and got to run Minnesota Twins spring training for 13 years down there. And then had the opportunity to come back to Hudson Valley all those years later, pick up where I left off basically, and help take this franchise to the next step, which turned out to be after, first we had COVID get in the way of things a little bit, and then Major League Baseball took over minor league baseball and restructured things. And we went from being a short season Tampa Bay Rays affiliate to a full season New York Yankees High A affiliate. And so I kind of guess it bookended things for me. Starting with the Yankees and then becoming a general manager for the Yankees farm club. And you know, honestly, that was really an awesome experience for a couple of years. But I had 35 years of running minor league baseball teams or being in the front office and helping to run minor league teams. And decided that at this point in my life, I wanted a little bit more flexibility. Living off a pocket schedule is tough. You know,
true.
It's a lifestyle. That's how I explain what we do. It's not just a job. You live and breathe and eat and sleep baseball when you work in this industry. And I've loved every minute of it, but I wanted a different path at this point in my life and was fortunate to be able to create my company that I have now and work on a ballpark that I love dearly. It's my favorite ballpark I've worked in of the four in my career. To get to help rebuild it and bring it up to Major League Baseball specs in the new world of how we operate. And happy to say that as of opening day this year, we got it to where it needed to be, and everything's great here in Hudson Valley. So it's great to be affiliated with the Yankees. And I think they like what they've got here, and they're happy with all the renovations and improvements, and we've heard nothing but good things.
Yeah, I will say, you know, as an outsider looking in, I've applauded a lot of, you know, minor league sports in general. I love. I'm a huge minor league sports advocate. I think everybody should go and experience it because, like you said, it is a very intimate experience. And for someone that truly loves the game of baseball, like myself and like you do, you know, being able to be in those intimate type environments for the sport, it just has a completely different feel than it does when you go to a major league game. And, you know, that's not a knock on major league games. They have their advantages, just like in you know, the minor league games may not have, but being able to really see people grow up per se is a really cool thing. And I love that, you know, you talk about how you really asked all the questions that you thought you would need to ask at the start of your career, and going around and talking to everybody and not feeling like you left anybody out, and really starting, you know, with a very basic type of job, you know, doing the season tickets. And I'm sure it was very difficult doing all, you know, sorting all the tickets out, putting them in the envelopes. That sounds like tedious work, but being able to work up, it kind of, it's a great story of being able to show, look, you know, you really got to work to where you get to, you know, things aren't going to be given to you. And you, there was a lot of persistence in that. And I applaud you greatly for that. And, you know, I did want to say, you know, now with Major League Baseball, like you did say, they're in charge of the minor leagues, right? One thing that I always wondered was what is, if any, is there any communication on a day-to-day basis between the big club and the minor league organization? Because I don't think a lot of people truly understand how that kind of communication works.
Sure, 100%. There's communication every day. And here's how I like to explain what we do as minor league baseball operators. If you were to look at the baseball field, everything that's in fair territory pretty much falls to the responsibility of the parent club, in this case, the Yankees. And everything foul territory back is the responsibility of the team operator, starting with the general manager and the entire staff that supports that. So, but there's a lot of overlap there. And especially in the new world of how things are going now, there's a lot of different responsibilities that the minor league operator has to make sure that the needs are met of the major league affiliate. And so, even if it's related to new players that are coming up, let's say in this case from Tampa, getting them acclimated once they arrive into town, and making sure that they've got a hat and a uniform and things of that nature. Those are all things that, you know, we're responsible for as the operator. And it's a really great relationship, though. I mean, there's important aspects of the facility to make sure that the things within the facility that are necessary for the team to operate and perform are met. You know, really works both the major league affiliate and minor league operators work together to make all that happen for the players and for the staff that's here.
That's fascinating. You know, I know there's got to be a ton of overlap, and I wonder, does it ever get confusing? You know, who, like, in terms of who to talk to with certain things? I'm sure, you know, you are more on the upper end of it, but could you have seen, like, how there could be a little confusion by different employees as to where certain things go? And this is just purely my curiosity.
Yeah. No, it's pretty well defined. You know, the chain of command and who we speak to with the Yankees in this case, and you know, when I was with the Twins in that case, with the Rays, you have a main point of contact, and if that they're not the individual that can answer your question or your concern, then they'll send you to the right person, or they'll get that information and get back to you. But in all my years of doing this, the relationships with the Major League affiliate have always been really solid, and the lines of communication have been really strong. And that's what's important in any kind of relationship, is that everybody is able to have that line of communication and make sure that everything's taken care of on a daily basis. And as long as that's happening, everything goes real smooth.
Yeah, it's really cool to hear, you know, just how important communication is, and having clear and defined things to communicate, you know, over. Because I think now, especially, you know, it's been talked about so much, and my generation is a huge part of it, just the lack of communication skills that a lot of younger generations have because of technology and that sort of thing. And just hearing, again, you know, I love hearing how important that stuff is, because if anybody can take away things from this episode, there's a lot to take away from it. You know, persistence, communication being key. It's just a lot of important things. And a lot of people do want to get into a similar position that you have the privilege to be in, you know. And as somebody that long dreamed to be a part of a minor league or major league organization, you know, it's a lot of stuff that is very fascinating to hear and hear the mindset for. And, you know, with that being said, you know, going from working with a minor league organization to running spring training for the Minnesota Twins, how does that work out? Because, and yeah, I don't need, you know, you can explain it as long as you want, but I'm sure you could talk for days in terms of the craziness that probably involves. But that's a lot of different organizations involved, obviously, because you're bringing all minor leagues together pretty much for the minor league camp and then the major league side of it. So really, what goes into it on the day-to-day that we might not see as fans? Now, I'm someone that did go. I love going to watch spring training. Mm-hmm. I think it's fascinating to come watch the drills. Games aside, I'm on the backfields watching the minor leaguers play, because, you know, nobody's over there. People don't realize that, you know, those guys are going to be the ones in the big leagues someday. So you might want to watch them. So what goes into the scheduling for all of this? And, you know, with other minor league clubs obviously sending their players down too, is there a lot of communication between all of those organizations, or is it kind of already set what's going on?
So, interesting question, and it's a little different than what my responsibilities were in the big scheme of things. So we played out of the Lee County Sports Complex down there in Fort Myers, and our responsibility of running spring training was a couple of different pieces. Now, one of them was not coordination of the players and the minor league players and the major league players, as far as where they're supposed to be within the complex and what their daily schedules look like. We were more from, again, the operations side.
Right. So,
well, we were providing security throughout the complex throughout February and March. We operated the team store. We made sure the ballpark was ready to go for game days. We helped the ticket operation, although we didn't run the ticket operation, the Twins did. We helped situate them as needed in their spaces, and then also the gate staff and security, the food and beverage operation in the building. So basically everything that was a fan touch point was what we were responsible for. And, you know, here's the interesting thing, and I'll tell you a funny sidebar. So, you know, like I said, I was there for 13 years, and running a baseball team in Florida, an outdoor facility, might be one of the most challenging things you could do in this business. You know, fortunately for the Marlins, they eventually got a dome stadium or a stadium with a roof, and the Rays have always had one. But when you're operating an outdoor facility in Florida during the summer months, you know, keep in mind, anybody that's been down to spring training, it typically doesn't rain much in March. But once you get to about Memorial Day through into October, you can pretty much mark your calendar every day sometime between 3 and 8 p.m. it's going to rain in some way, shape, or form. And that could be a sprinkle to 4 inches of rain. And it just wreaks havoc on everything you do. So that was part of the reason I wanted to come back to New York, was to, besides loving the Renegades as an organization and the fan base and the partners in the community here, whether they were sponsors or Dutchess County government, just loved every aspect of what I did here over those first 10 years that I was here. But it was getting back to the New York Penn League 38 home game schedule and getting from, you know, between spring training and a 70 home game schedule for the Miracle. We were 85 to 90 openings. Plus we had events year round down there because it was Florida. You could do that year round. So there wasn't much of a break. And I was down there from the time that my kids were 6 and 2 to 20 and 16, I think they were. I lose track. I think that's all right. So that was a tough juggle from a personal perspective. To, you know, raise my family and be, you know, with my wife, and, you know, she took on a lot during those years, while I was working days and nights and weekends all throughout the season, and it's a juggle, and it's, you know, in this business, that life work life balance is hard to pull off as anything that's out there. I would challenge it to any business, but I'm fortunate we pulled it off, but we had the opportunity to come back to something a little less hectic. And so that was one of the main reasons to come back to Hudson Valley. And then, you know, 4 years later, we're a full season schedule again. Now, not spring training as well, but, you know, added basically 28 openings to the 38 that we had. So it was, a little bit not what I expected long term to sign up for, right? And so that was part of the reason to after the 2022 season, to find how can I stay in this and have a different path with a little bit more of work-life balance. And so, it's the spring training aspect of it's a lot of fun. I mean, I loved every second of it. Again, there is the baseball fan side of me. And so, you know, there's always the little kid in me that just loves being around all that. But, you know, it's more the energy and the experience than anything else. Like, you don't really see a lot of baseball when you're running these teams. You're too busy doing the work of the day and making sure everything's going well. You know, most spring training days, I walked over 30,000 steps a day just because, you know, walking throughout the ballpark, just checking on every aspect of the operation from the time we got in there at 8 a.m. to the time we left at 8 p.m. You know, it was a long, busy day.
It's a long day.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it was usually, you know, 15 to 18 openings. If we had the World Baseball Classic, it was usually on the higher end, depending on the year. But, it was great working with the Minnesota Twins. They're a first-class organization. It was interesting watching the Yankees and Twins the last 3 days play each other, because that's another funny story. When I first got down there in 2003, everybody knew I was coming from New York. And so the Yankees and Twins were playing each other in the playoffs that year. And we did a little watch party in the clubhouse at the stadium down there. And everybody's, you know, I'm introducing myself. They all knew where I was from. And they were like, well, you're rooting for the Twins now, right? And I'm like, of course I am. And, you know, I'm like behind my, you know, in my brain, I'm like, yeah, no, that's not happening yet.
Well, fast forward, right?
Fast forward to 2009. I was torn that year when the Yankees and Twins played each other. Because I think at that time of the 25-man postseason roster, I think 18 players had come through Fort Myers, right? Possibly right before I got there, all the way through to, you know, maybe even that season. Or maybe some of those guys were there on rehabs. So, like, now there was a personal relationship there with you know, not only the players that came through, but, you know, a lot of the administration of the Minnesota Twins and Terry Ryan and Bill Smith and Dave St. Peter and you know, just all the people that work for the organization. I had a relationship, you know, business relationship and even personally. And so I was torn. But the way I looked at it was, well, whoever wins that series, you know, that's a win for me because somebody's moving on that I care deeply about. So, of course, the Yankees went on to win the World Series that year. So not so bad. But, boy, the Yankees have owned the Twins over the years. It's just like the Yankees are their kryptonite or something. Like they go in there and they just – I don't know what it is. It's a really unbalanced win-loss record. I think the Yankees – it's like almost like the course of a full season's worth of games. And the Yankees are playing like 750 baseball against them during that time.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I personally, I want it, you know, the players say they don't, it doesn't go from player to player or generation of player to generation of player. But it's got to be in the back of their minds that like this team just consistently owns them. But, you know, I was happy watching the series. I just, you know, right before we started recording, I watched the end of the last game here and a nice little sweep for us going into the White Sox, who that's a whole different story of a team going on this year. I won't, you know, I don't want to get into that one, but
don't let your guard down. You know, those are the teams that'll surprise you sometimes. So
yeah, exactly.
The Yankees just keep rolling here.
Yeah, they can't play down to their opponent. I always say that you can't. You just got to treat it like same team every time you go out there. But
exactly.
You know, one thing, you know, you did talk about how you transitioned to. Now you're doing, you know, some consulting for Diamond Baseball Holdings, and you own your own consulting, you know, professional sports consulting. So my question would be now, just out of, because I don't know what the difference would be, is what is the difference that you do from working directly for the Renegades to now consulting for the Renegades? Because I believe you do consult for the Renegades.
Yeah, that as well. So the biggest difference is just not being in that building every day and for every game, for every minute. You know, when I left, our assistant GM, Tyson Jeffers, he took over as general manager, and then he had the opportunity after the last season to move down to Spartanburg, South Carolina, to help get their franchise started. There's going to be the Down East Wood Ducks are moving there for the 2025 season. And so they just announced their name the other day, these Hub City Spartanburgers.
I love that.
It's an awesome name. And you know, it's a great opportunity for Tyson to help build a ballpark from scratch. And it's something I've done a few times in my career. So that's a lot of fun. It's a great experience. But the opportunity to do things at a different level. And again, you know, my main job the last 2 years here, besides working with Tyson and now Zach Bukowski, the GM in Hudson Valley, who was Tyson's assistant. And you know, I had the opportunity to help both of them roll into their first year as general managers. And you know, I was happy to help each of them because I was part of helping them grow into those roles. So I really want to see them do well. And any opportunity that I can have to help them succeed and do well and continue to grow this operation here. And they've both been phenomenal operators and have done amazing jobs in their young career so far of leading teams. So, but the main crux of what I was doing, what I've been doing since I got into this role, was overseeing facility standards improvements here in Hudson Valley. As we were talking about before, now Heritage Financial Park, then Dutchess Stadium, opened in 1994. And you know, the standards of what the facilities need to be in 30 years is it's 540 degrees from what they were when we started, right? And so, and most of that is all in player amenities. It's the clubhouse, it's the field, weight rooms, batting tunnels, the clubhouse amenities in general. These types of things didn't exist 30 years ago where there were any real hard guidelines of what they needed to be. So there was a lot of inconsistency across minor league baseball, a lot of facilities. Some of them were newer. Ours, you know, our ballpark in 1994 was one of the gems of the league. It was brand new. It was up to date, you know, for what 1994 standards were. But, you know, over time, there were a lot of new ballparks that popped up over the years that, you know, we fell a little bit behind here. So, you know, fortunately, between Diamond Baseball Holdings and Dutchess County, state of New York. Funding was in place where we were able to do the necessary improvements to make this a first-class facility that the Yankees are proud of, and that the players who come through here are excited to be here every day. You know, when you have the amenities that you need to be a professional athlete right at your disposal, and you get to show up every day and have access to that, that's a big piece. And that, you know, Homegrown is going to be doing a piece on the new clubhouse and the new amenities here for the players. I'm excited to see that, because they did a little sneak peek on the last episode where the players, when they first came here to Hudson Valley for preseason workouts, we had them in our existing visiting clubhouse building, which is what they used last year while this building was under construction. And then we had temporary visitor facilities brought in for one season. So that's where they were housed out of for the first couple of days of the preseason workouts. And then the team went on the road for a couple of weeks to start the season. So Yes Network and Homegrown, they were here to capture the players' reactions when they walked into that building for the first time. And I was just standing off in the corner of the room after, you know, being basically right on the front line of developing this space over the last basically 3 years from design to completion. And, you know, watching them come in and seeing their faces light up and like, oh my goodness, like this is amazing. These are amazing facilities. We can't wait to get started living in this space and being here every day. And, you know, look, the players, they spend a lot of time in these clubhouses. And one of the unique things that we have here, and again, like bullpens, brand new, everything is brand new. There isn't an existing player amenity from 2 years ago that exists now that was here 2 years ago. Everything.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So everything's been redone. And, you know, again, it's just really neat to see the reaction and then watch them get in and utilize these spaces, the technology, Matt. I mean, just the technology that's needed to make sure that these spaces are what they need to have. Video rooms, you know, equipment that basically tracks everything they do so they could go and look at their swing and look at their pitching motion. You know, cameras that feed back to Tampa and to New York so that people in player development can watch every pitch of every game and every bullpen session. Just amazing. And so the infrastructure that's needed for all this technology to exist is very crucial to the project. And a lot of that happens obviously before the walls even, you know, go up, things that have to be in place for all this to happen. So there's so many moving parts. It's thousands and thousands and thousands of pieces that you wouldn't even think of, some of the things that have to happen before you put walls up in a building, like the amount of wires, the miles of wires, hundreds of thousands of miles of wiring that goes through these buildings just to support the technology. It's amazing. It's a lot of fun. And even when I look back to the rebuild that I did down in Fort Myers 10 years ago, just to today, just the standards that have changed and things that are necessary. You know, our Heritage Financial Park, we have standalone batting cages for both the visiting and home team. We have standalone weight rooms for both teams. We have female facilities for both the home, visiting, and umpires. So we have some really unique spaces that aren't even required above and beyond what's required. You know, we have the proper LED lighting, the fan netting that goes down both baselines. Everything about the facility is top notch now. And so just an exciting time. And it was really, for me, it was a joy and a pleasure and a lot of fun to be part of that project and help run point basically to make sure that everything that everybody needed was in place. And then you also learn, you know, some of the things that I wish I did that a little differently, but you know, at the end of the day, just some tremendous spaces. And we were able to also add some new fan amenity spaces too. We have a new club space here at Heritage Financial Park, a new picnic space, two new group spaces at the far end of our third base seating bowl. So, you know, mixed in with all the player amenities, we're able to upgrade the fan amenities as well. So just a great transformation of this building in the last 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, that's incredible. And, you know, it's one thing to fans can tell when players are happy. You know, you can see on the field through body language, facial expressions. So to know that, like, the player amenities, look, those guys are there. You know, it's their home away from home. For a lot of them, they're probably there more than they're at home. And oh, yeah. To have all those things available, you know, you see a happy product on the field. And I will say, you know, I haven't had the chance to get there this summer. I'm going to be making an appearance at a Renegades game for sure.
Awesome.
I know that the entire podcast has a plan to come out and watch a game together. And I'm just so excited because the pictures I see of the whole facility it's incredible. And it's really just, it's nice to see because, you know, minor league sports, like I said, I you know, when I was younger, you know, you go to some of the games and you have these great memories of all these ballparks. And it's nice to see them being upkept as you get older and older. You know, around here, I live in Massachusetts. I don't live, you know, I wish I lived in New York sometimes so I could be closer to Yankee games and things of that nature. But I do have the privilege of going to Yard Goats games, which they've been very highly renowned for having great facilities. Dunkin' Donuts Park is a very nice place to go watch a game. So, you know, just hearing about how much goes into these renovations for fields, and you're right. I'm sure you talked to a bunch of people that you probably never thought you would talk to because all these little things with all the wires and all these different bits and pieces of technology. The stadium is becoming more and more like a computer and, you know, making sure that all that information gets back to who it needs to get back to. And that's such a fascinating piece. It really is because people don't think about it. You know, you go to a high school baseball field and a lot of the times you have you got your pitching mound. Some places have a cage and, you know, and then the field and you think, okay, this is what players need, right? And it's like, no, they need a lot more than that. When you're a professional, so that it's really fascinating. Now, on the consulting, in terms of professional sports consulting, what you do, your company, I'd love to hear more about that and what drove you to start, you know, your own company. I think it's fascinating and a great kudos to you.
Thanks. Yeah, I throughout my career, I've had a lot of people who help me grow in what I do. And I kind of looked at it from a standpoint of there's a lot of knowledge after 35 years of doing this and then also running point on some projects like what we've just done here. And to have the ability to do that in other ballparks or with other teams across the country and talk to people. I had a call today with somebody who's working on a project in another state and was able to share some of the information and experience of what we're doing here. And just had another call the other day as well with regard to some of the parts of the facility here. So it really is fun to be able to share that knowledge and do it in other places where, you know, it's not just plug and play. Every ballpark is different. Every operation is different. But sometimes when you can take bits and pieces of information from different places, and really, as operators in this business, that's what we all do. We all steal from one another because what happens in Hartford, maybe in Hudson Valley, nobody's seen that or, you know, that promotion or that experience that's provided at the ballpark. You know, I went to a game in Hartford a few years back and got to pet the goats out in center field. And I don't know if that would go over as well with raccoons here in Hudson Valley, but you know, kind of cool though. You know, all the different branding that they have in Hartford with the mascot, and as one that really kind of made me laugh. I was walking through the concourse, and they have one of the, I think it's the family restroom, and they literally have their mascot, the yard goat, sitting basically like he's sitting reading a newspaper in the bathroom. Just found that to be really funny. And
it is. It's hilarious. It really is.
I love edgy stuff like that. And again, you know, it's the ability to be able to share those types of experiences and information. That's what we all do in this business. So to be able to do that at a different level, which I'm able to do now, is a lot of fun.
Yeah, so, that's a fun. Great point. That's a great point. And I, you know, being able to share knowledge is so valuable. And I, you know, I'm somebody that one of my jobs outside of, you know, doing podcasting, which is a hobby for me, I'm actually a college swim coach. And what I do a lot of in that realm, and it's a completely different sport, but you know, asking my peers who have been in positions like this longer than I have, their different opinions on, you know, different things that they do at practice or how they approach team events and, you know, different things to motivate. It's so important to share that information from one person to another because, you know, people can pick out what they like and what they don't like and have it be their opinion, and that's all entirely to them. But making sure that the good opinions get out there and carry on are really, really important. You talk about sharing too. I'm just curious because it's a very large company. Diamond Baseball Holdings, they own quite a bit of minor league organizations, correct? Now, how does that all work in terms of as a company? Because I think it's very fascinating that they do own quite a bit and or have a majority stake in a lot of minor league clubs. And I'm just as someone that's not involved in it, I guess I'd love to know more about what that's like. If you know, if you have knowledge to share on that.
Yeah, it honestly, it's a tremendous company, and they're growing day by day. They're bringing in new teams into the fold here literally every month. They do a great job of understanding how minor league baseball teams function in their communities. And the first thing that they do is when they acquire a team, they really kind of leave the staff in place. They let the team operate. They get to know what the team has been doing, and then what they bring to the table is resources. And what are those resources? Well, it's other teams in the ownership group where we can all share ideas amongst all of us. They have resources of when you work from a larger number, larger scale purchasing, larger scale contracting of services. Working as a larger piece, if you know, one of the things that Diamond is looking at is other uses of facilities, and they're starting to get into routing, whether it's concerts or comedy shows or events through all of their locations or as many of them as they can. It's a brilliant idea, and Peter Freund and Pat Battle and the staff that they put together, leading Diamond Baseball Holdings. They're phenomenal people. They're passionate about what they do. They understand this business. But most importantly, they let, even though that we're all, you know, all the teams that are part of Diamond Baseball Holdings are part of this large group, they let the teams operate individually in their markets with the philosophy of how they've done it in the past. And then they offer tweaks and improvements and opportunities for growth through some of the avenues I just mentioned. So the teams that are in this group have tremendous operators and tremendous staffs. There's a lot of talent within this family of teams, and it's just a pleasure to be a part of it and do my small part.
Yeah, well, hey, it's no small part. You gotta, you know, pat yourself on the back for all the hard work you do. It is truly, truly a lot. And I wanna now venture into something that I find absolutely fascinating and I'm so excited to try now. It is something that you are now a part of as well, and it is Sweet and Boozy. I'm gonna be honest. I had never heard of Sweet and Boozy before doing research for this, but now I'm seeing, first of all, that they're in a ton of locations, and it combines almost all of my favorite things. It combines baseball, ice cream, and booze. So, you know, obviously, you know, being a baseball fan yourself and being in that environment, it definitely helped draw you to the idea, but how did you get involved with the company? And you know, obviously you guys are expanding into a lot of minor league parks, and I'm sure you've got your footprint all over that. It seems like it definitely is a great idea. I just love to hear more about the company because my God, it just looks so good.
Sure. So here's an example of where all the planets align and things just, you know, kind of work out for a reason. So back in 2019, a childhood friend of mine, Neil Werner, he called me one day and he said, "Hey, I'm starting up this ice cream company called Sweet and Boozy." And I said, "All right, tell me more." And And he goes on to explain how he's got a shop he was opening up in outside of Houston. And he explained the concept. It was actually his kids that came up with the idea of booze-infused ice cream. Why his kids, I don't know. But they thought it was a cool idea. And then it's not just so much the ice cream itself, but it's the presentation. And, you know, it's not just a scoop of ice cream in a cup. It's how the presentation of this item looks. It's layered, and there's extras, you know, there's extras in there. There's drizzle, there's inclusions of, you know, M&Ms and Oreo pieces. And then, you know, at one point we were doing a big piece of cake on top, and I think we're going to bring that back over time, but it's just, As a ballpark operator, obviously the food and beverage piece is one of the key ingredients for what we do. You look through minor league baseball, and now you've got so many teams that are branding with a food item. You know, here in Hudson Valley, they did the cider donuts, which we were working on as I was transitioning out of running the team in 2022. We worked on that identity throughout the 2022 season. You know, Charleston, the boiled peanuts, Rochester, the plates, the garbage plates. You could just go on and on and on. There's almost every team has a food item that's an alternate brand themselves. But that just shows you the importance of the food and beverage experience in the ballpark. So, from my perspective, I always feel like the dessert area is an underserved part of the ballpark food experience. You know, you've got Dippin' Dots. That's kind of the novelty ice cream that's out there in a lot of ballparks. But you just don't see a whole lot of other unique offerings in the dessert line. So I said to my friend Neil, well, you know, great that you're doing that down in Houston, but I need you to come here and set something up in Hudson Valley, because I'd love to see this in a ballpark. And he said, well, let's figure it out. Well, we had it all ready to go for 2020. And then, of course, COVID came around and we didn't get to do it. So we started in 2021, and it was a wild success here. And it was just, you know, just as I envisioned, it was people. And I loved it as an operator. I love to be out in the ballpark and interact with fans and just kind of watch what they're doing and what are the trends that I'm seeing. And the trend that I saw within 2 weeks of this product in the ballpark was, you know, people buying one or two, walking away from the stand back to their seat, and they're carrying these giant ice creams that just are a beautiful presentation. And, you know, people walking up to us, where'd you get that? Oh, we got it over there. Oh, okay. And then all of a sudden this line is 30, 40 deep. People didn't care that they were waiting, you know, two innings. and again, you know, if you want something really good, sometimes you wait a little longer for it. And that's, you know, it's not, like I said, the presentation of this, it's literally built in front of you. And it's, you know, it's a custom made item. Basically, you have a list of toppings, you have different types of ice cream. You could kind of create it as you want. So, but the reaction of fans, when they got this was just phenomenal. And so, in 2022, the Woo Sox in Worcester, they brought it on. And then after the 22 season, there was a lot of interest that, you know, word kind of got around, as it does in this business. And, many of the Diamond Baseball teams, in fact, because of my involvement in Diamond Baseball Holdings, and actually they heard about it, and you know, that we were able to bring it to a lot of their teams, and then we built that from there. We were in spring training with Bradenton with the Pirates this year. We were with the Dayton Dragons. We're in Las Vegas with the Aviators. So we're growing, but we don't want to grow too fast. You know, the important thing is to get it right and kind of build at a nice pace where you've really got it in a really good place, and then kind of build it from there. We've had other teams reach out to us, you know, some of which we'll introduce in the future. You know, you go onto the Sweet and Boozy website and you kind of look at the map, and you can see we're all over the country in a lot of ballparks. Plus we've got a food truck in Minneapolis. We've got stores down in New Orleans. We're going to have a store back up in the Houston area again. I think there's a couple of locations out in California that are carrying the product now. I believe Hawaii's going to, somebody in Hawaiian Islands are going to, there's somebody out there who's going to be bringing the product out there. So it's really exciting to see that grow. And again, you know, I, one of the things in my experience in minor league baseball, I ran food and beverage for 3 years. And that was one of those pieces of doing all the jobs so that I understood when I was running a team, what went into running that department. I ran food and beverage. And I just remember, you know, a lot of that experience and a lot of that knowledge, it kind of came pouring back in my ability to become involved with this. And again, it's just another, it's a cool thing to be a part of, help grow something like this and see it more than anything, see the positive reactions from teams and the fans that are, you know, being able to get this product. And you know, you mentioned the booze infused ice cream. Obviously that's the novelty of the sweet and boozy line, but there's regular ice cream as well. And some of the booze infused flavors are amazing. Definitely if you go onto the website and check out, you know, it might be near in a ballpark near you, as they say. So go check them out.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's your favorite flavor, leading into that?
Actually the strawberry mallow is, and it's not one of the booze infused flavors. That for me is the favorite one. It's just, there's just something about it. It's really, really good. And you gotta be careful eating really high end ice cream because if you eat too much of it, you know what happens. So.
Oh yeah. That's, trust me. One of our co-hosts would definitely agree with you on that. Eating too much ice cream, if any, for him, but ends poorly, but it's something that as soon as I read the idea and like the website and going on and kind of reading about the product, I thought to myself, I was like, how has someone not thought of this before, especially for baseball games? I feel like that's like the perfect environment to sit down, have like some ice cream, you know, watching the game. You said the presentation's great. You know, we all know that people love to live on social media, you know, so being able to post, you know, the presentation on social media is a great thing. And you know, I just was absolutely blown away at the fact that it wasn't thought of before. And I was kicking myself that I didn't think about it. But then again, I would have been, you know, a little bit more on the younger side for starting a company like that. I don't know if I would have been able to actually, you know, buy my own product at that time.
There's a lot that goes into it. But again, it's for me, just kind of knowing both sides of the business, right? And one of the things that I really enjoy now with my consulting side is going into ballparks and playing the role of being a fan. And just going in and being able to provide information just from an operations standpoint and look at how things are going and make suggestions. And you know, again, not to push a product that I'm involved with, but, you know, to like I said, the dessert side of things seems to be underserved in many ballparks. And I think this is just a perfect addition, whether it's the booze-infused ice cream or even the regular ice cream, just the presentation of it and the uniqueness of it is what makes it work.
Yeah, no, I trust me. I agree. I'm a big dessert fan. I've been supporting desserts since I was very little. So I've been a part of the fan club for quite some time. And, you know, I want to just end with, you know, you talk about being a fan now, being able to be more of a fan. How hard is it to go to a game and just be a true fan without trying to, you know, you were big in the operation. So how much do you, you know, do a little looking around and seeing different things?
That's a great question, because for all these years, I've been married 32 years and my wife, if we went to a game as a fan, it's the first thing she'll say to me before we walk in. She goes, "Can you just enjoy yourself tonight?" and it's very hard to do that, obviously, because, you know, especially when I was running a team, you're always looking for ideas, like I said, to steal. We do that in this industry all the time. Or to look at things that they're doing operationally and say, wow, that's a really great idea. I want to do something like that in my ballpark. But yeah, from a consulting side, to be able to put yourself in those shoes, I think it helps kind of having an operator's perspective as well. And being a fan, you know, I was a fan long before I was an operator. So I had that side of me. It's still there. Like, I'm still a huge baseball fan, and I always have been, and I always will be. And the ballpark experience, I'm going to a game on Sunday, Yankees, White Sox. And
I might be there as well.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
Each other, but it's you know, that again, to go and try to take yourself out of wearing the operator's hat and just being a fan. It's hard, but in the same light, I find it that there's a dual purpose there. And it, you know, I'm constantly thinking about, you know, what are some of the things I could pick up when I go to a facility, at, whether it's a stadium, an arena, anywhere across the country, for whatever type of event that is. A lot of what we do, it all carries over from one end to the other. So it's hard to separate those two, but I think I've found a good balance. I really, especially now that I'm not operating a team day to day. So I think I'm able to probably pull myself a little bit more to the fan side versus the operator.
That's good. I'm sure it's like taking a deep exhale, right? You know, just being able to get to that point. And I've got a long way to go until I get to my exhale, but you know, it's certainly definitely a point that I look forward to in my life. But you know, I do want to thank you for your time today, being able to kind of give us the insight in all of these fascinating different things and helping me expand my knowledge of the game that I love in baseball and how all the operations work. Cause I'm somebody that I like to know what everybody does for, you know, the organizations that I follow and support. So it was truly, truly fascinating. And I really thank you very, very much. If I see you on Sunday, I'll have to buy you a Judge burger.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep. That's you know what? I was there for opening day in 2023. It was the first day that they had him out, and I was actually sitting on that level where that stand is, kind of on the third base side of home plate, like in the middle level of the stadium. And I think they sold the 99 before I even got there, because you know that's like limited to 99. I don't know if they're still doing it that way, but
no, you can get as many as you want now.
Yeah. They realized they were leaving money on the table. But yeah, people were, again, the same kind of thing, kind of like what I alluded to with Sweet and Boozy, where people wait online for two or three innings for something. It was the same thing with that. Yeah, that looks awfully good. That's probably a little high calorie count for what I'm looking to do these days, trying to behave, but, you know, we could share it maybe.
Yeah. You know, I always say I'm trying to be better. And then as soon as I see something at the ballpark, I'm like, this is too enticing, but Sweet and Boozy is going to be one of them. So it's going to be, hey, I'll be a great customer. So, but with that, I will definitely, I'll leave you to all of your fun endeavors. Do you have any social media handles that you would like to shout out for people to reach out to you at? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. At Home Run PSC on X is the best way to follow me there. So I like to post a lot of things that are sports related, specifically Yankees and Renegades. So if you're into all that, obviously this is a Yankee centric podcast. So definitely check us out there, and at hvrenegades.com, the website for the Renegades, and at hvrenegades. A lot of great players up and coming through the Yankee system. I'll leave you with this. So my last two seasons as a general manager, we had some pretty good players come through. Some kid named Volpe, another kid named Wells, you know, just to name a few. But you know, that's the beauty of minor league baseball, like you said, to see players make it to the major leagues. And you know, as I mentioned to you, when I was in Fort Myers with the Miracle, we had, gosh, almost the whole Twins roster at one point was filled with players that were playing in Fort Myers when I was there, or just before, or, you know, even after since. And that's the beautiful thing about minor league baseball. You know, major league baseball games are great, but if you live near a minor league ballpark or have the opportunity to travel to one, especially here in Hudson Valley, come on out, check out a game. It's intimate. It's fun. It's unique. It's different. If you've ever been to a game before, a minor league baseball game, I trust you will become a fan from the second you walk into one of these ballparks. It's just the best experience out there. And I'm just really blessed that I've had the opportunity to work in minor league baseball for so many years and be a part of that and watch it grow and evolve too. It's really come a long way in 36, 37 years since I got into this. And just to see where it is today and the strength of what it is, and, you know, a great ownership group like Diamond Baseball Holdings and doing the things that they're able to do to really help and enhance the fan experience at all those ballparks too. It just makes it that much better.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for joining today. Everybody, you can give us a follow. Give Battle of New York a follow on X, Battle of NYBB, and give myself a follow on X if you want. Matt Nodell, N-O-D-E-L-L. Very much appreciated. Thank you so much.
Pleasure, Matt. Thanks for having me today.